Madam President, I move further proceedings and the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant is instructed to bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the intern pastor Jennifer Collins from our Redeemer Lutheran Church in St. Paul. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good morning. Let us all begin in prayer. Mighty and holy God, we gather this day and seek the blessing on the tasks that are set before us. Let there be clear insight of all the deliberations that must happen, that there be wisdom, that you work with all of these political leaders, that they have clarity. Gracious and loving one, we ask that you be present in this place as this community gathers to make decisions. May they use their best skills and judgment as they consider the work at hand. May the actions be in accordance with the people and what is best for all in our community. Amen. Amen.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which nation under God, indivisible. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Second reading of House bills, House File 307 will be given its second reading. Introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills listed on today's introduction calendar are given their first reading and referred as indicated. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. These are authors' motions to be accepted all as one motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 67 be withdrawn from the Committee on Jobs, Ags, and Rural Development and returned to its author, and I am the author.
On the Brown motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that Senate File 1294 be withdrawn from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Is this your bill?
This is my bill.
And you've spoken with both chairs?
I have spoken with Senator Skoy. I believe we've also notified the other chair.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sharon. Could the people standing in front of Senator Sharon please move? Thank you.
Hello.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 253 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and given a second reading and placed on general orders. This is a bill that the finance components were eliminated.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate File 253 will be given its second reading. Senator Nelson. Oops, she's not here. Okay. Senator Bach.
Madam President, members, we're about to recess, and the majority will caucus for briefly less than 30 minutes in room 107.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. Yes, our caucus will be meeting in 112.
Madam President, I move a recess of the Senate.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess. Senate is under call. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Okay. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I would like to move Senate File 1757 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance, given a second reading and placed on general orders. Madam President, I have spoken with the Chair of the Finance Committee, and there is a fiscal note on this bill, which shows zero.
And it's your bill, Senator Nelson?
Oh, yes. It is my bill.
On the motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate File 1757 will be given its second reading. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that we take Senate Resolution 129 from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, members, what you have in front of you in Senate Resolution 129 are the new permanent rules of the Senate for the biennium. They have been heard in the Subcommittee on Permanent and Joint Rules as well as the full Rules Committee. There's a very, very minor changes from what we've currently been operating under this session. There are some very technical changes that originated with nonpartisan Senate staff. There is the only real substantive change is we're making a change to the new Mason's Manual from the 1989 edition to the 2010 edition that was on everybody's desks last Tuesday when you came back from the Easter break. So with that, Madam President, I urge your support.
Is there any discussion? Are there any amendments? Do we get, do we... Senator Bach, you need to move to adopt the resolution.
Yes?
Madam President, I move adoption of Senate Resolution 129.
I think Senator Limmer has a motion.
Thank you, Madam President. I have an amendment that I'd like to present.
The Secretary will present the amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 129 as follows. Rule 36.8 is amended to read, and this is the A5 amendment.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, many times when we're speaking on the floor of the Senate, we get rather involved in our debates. And during those debates, especially those members that are toward the front of this chamber, it makes it rather difficult to have a good conversation without facing each other once in a while. This amendment would modify that rule. We all know that we have to address our comments to the president, but this would modify the rule, and the basic gist of the amendment would be, after being recognized by the president and addressing the president while facing the president, a member may turn toward another member when speaking rather than facing the president during a debate. And I honestly believe, Madam Chair, that this would help our discussion, and it would help not only the verbal communication that we get engaged in, but also the nonverbal communication as well. And I'll stand for any questions, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions? Comment, Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, I need to speak against the amendment. Members, part of the reason that the Senate historically has had the level of decorum that we've had is because we make our remarks through the president to whoever we would like to address. I spent my time over in the other body, like many of you in this chamber, and the exchanges that they get into when they interact directly with each other, I think, extends the discourse much longer over there than is necessary, oftentimes makes things personal, and I have seen time and time again where when they get into a hot debate and they're exchanging with each other, that they forget about the speaker completely, and they just try to interact with each other on the floor. I think we would lose some control on proceedings on the Senate floor. Debates would be drug out longer, and our decorum would be probably not as Senate-like as we historically have liked to have it. So.
Is there any other discussion on the A5 amendment? Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, after listening to Senator Bach, I'm not convinced that democracy as represented in the Minnesota Senate is going to fall apart because we can't look at each other as we talk to one another, as we try and reason with one another. I find this particular rule of the Senate, dare I say, antiquated. We communicate all the time with friends, family, colleagues, in committees. All the time we look at each other, we visit with each other, we talk one another, we reason, and we come to good decisions. So, Senator Bach, with all due respect, even though I can't see you right now, I want you to know that I don't think the dire, extreme circumstances that you described would actually occur if we were allowed to face one another from time to time. You know, if I wanted to have a historical reference to something, I certainly would turn to my good friend and colleague, Senator Cohen. Or if I wanted to talk to something that was going on in the Judiciary Committee, I'd want to turn and visit with Senator Letts. There's a lot of issues that we debate on, and it's not all adversarial. It oftentimes is just the process of reasoning. And yet, for those members that sit in the front, you know, down here by this well where members used to speak all the time, now with the advent of microphones, now we can't look at each other. So I honestly believe that it would help our communication. I believe it would make it less adversarial. And I also believe that It's just good common sense and courtesy to face someone as you're discussing an issue, whether it's a debate, whether it's a highly emotional cause, or whether it's just let us have good discourse, let us have good conversation, and let's do the very best for the people back home. I'll continue to stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, I would rise in support of this amendment. Senator Limmer, perhaps we'd have to just limit how much you could look at another person to maybe 10 or 20% of your speech, and the President could interpret that, and then they'd that would just gradually move us into the ability to look at who we are speaking to or answering a question for. But you raise a good point, Senator Limmer. Of course, I don't want to look at you because then I'd be violating the Senate rules, so I will look straight ahead at Madam President. Senator Limmer, one of the first things you would learn if you went to one of our high schools or colleges in speech or debate courses would be eye contact. Eye contact, look at your audience, look at who you're talking to, engage. And so you are exactly right when you talk about these archaic rules that the Senate, at one time it might have made sense, but Senator Limmer, I would rise in support with you and suggest that maybe even just 10 or 20% of the time you could look at the subject that you're talking to or answering in the Senate. Madam President, I hope I haven't violated the rule and I've looked exactly at you in accordance with the rules.
Senator Westrom, you're looking exactly at me. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Westrom really shared my point of view, which really is a skill level of looking at somebody is not only respectful, but you can learn a lot more or as much by watching somebody's facial expressions. I think it's really important, and it's probably more important to the majority since they sit behind that they can't see the expressions of our faces. When we get done talking, we can turn around and watch them. And it really helps us to know where they're coming from a little bit more. It's kind of like talking to somebody on the phone or talking to them in person. It really does help. So I would ask people to, members, to really consider this and Senator Limmer's amendment.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. A division's been called. All those in favor of the A5 amendment, please stand. You may be seated. All those opposed to the amendment, please stand. You may be seated. The vote is 15 in favor, 44 opposed. The amendment does not prevail. It was not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Westrom.
Madam President, I would move the A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Westrom moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 129 as follows. Rule 17.4 is amended to read, and this is the A51 amendment.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, members, I know change can be very, very difficult, very hard. Technology progresses. Things progress as we get older, and innovations are made. Inventions are made. And members, this is just a very small change. What it would do, it would just allow a sealed bottle of water to be on the Senate floor and consumed by members if they chose. It's not pop. It's not beer. It's not chips. It's not food. It's not anything else. It's just H2O. And so this would just make a minor exception to the food that's banned from the floor, which is fine. But I know there's long debates. Water is a healthy thing to encourage people to drink. The more and more you read and study and hear doctors and medical professionals, there's one common thing that probably is something most of us don't consume enough of, but all of us should consume more of to deal with any ailment or any aspect of being healthier. That is drinking more water. And so when we are in debates on the floor, the public doesn't know we are not allowed to have water on our desk. The chamber across the Capitol here, the House of Representatives, does allow this. But members, they allow a lot more. This would just allow a sealed bottle of water to be permitted on the floor if a member or a staff person chose on those rare occasions. And members, one last reason I think this is a good time to make this incremental small step for all the reasons I mentioned, but as you know, the Capitol is going under renovation. And so if this rule change was made, perhaps it would be the time that maybe they would have a bottle holder or something on our desk so it is even less likely to spill. Because the Senate has made some changes. If you look at our desks, right up here there's cords that allow our computers to plug in. I can only imagine how big of a debate that was back in its day to change that little feature on our desk. But members, now would be the time to allow this. It's very small, it's very reasonable, and I think it's a very healthy aspect to encourage senators and members and staff on our floor, if they choose, to drink some H2O, especially when we get into long debates. Members, I'd ask for your support and this small step or change in the Senate process.
Madam President.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, there seems to be a lot of noise in the room, and since I can't turn around, could you instruct them to be a little more quiet?
Members, please keep the noise down. Any more discussion on the A51 amendment? Senator Bach.
Oh, Madam President, members, I'd like you to look down at your desk. We've been given a tremendous privilege to sit in these chairs and at these historic desks. And you'll notice on them there's glass on the slanted part, but on the flat part, where the water bottles are likely to sit, there is no glass. And clearly damage will be done to these very historic desks if we start allowing liquids to be on them. Members, there is water in the retiring room steps away for members to be able to consume. It's not necessary that we have it on the Senate floor. So again, Senator Westrom, I understand the other body does this, but that's not reason enough for the Senate to follow suit.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Miller.
Madam President, will Senator Westrom yield?
Senator Westrom will yield. Senator Miller.
Senator Westrom, would members be allowed to open the sealed container on the Senate floor?
Madam President.
Senator Westrom.
I believe Senator Miller is off to my right, but I can't look to make sure we are looking at him. But, Madam President, Senator Miller, yes, we would allow that just for the consumption part of the water.
Is there any more discussion? All right, ready to vote. All those in favor of the A51 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything. Senator Westrom, did you say something?
Madam President, I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the A50 amendment.
Senator Westrom moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 129 as follows. Rule 17.4 is amended to read. This is the A50 amendment.
Madam President,
Senator Westrom.
Save the time of a division, I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted.
Madam President, members, this is a even narrower version of the last amendment that did not pass. But members, this would at least allow pregnant or nursing mothers serving in the Senate or staff in the Senate to have water. It doesn't get any more common sense than that. I think we could make this small step in the Senate. I urge your support.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Westrom, I almost called you representative because it appears we haven't been able to housebreak you yet. Senator Westrom, I'd appreciate it if you withdraw this amendment. I don't think this is helpful, especially to ask for a roll call on this. This is not in the normal discourse of the Senate, and so my request is that you withdraw your amendment.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 10 ayes and 51 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Seeing none, then Senator Bach renews his motion that Senate Resolution 129 be adopted. Is there any more discussion? Secretary will take the roll on the amendment, on the motion. On the resolution.
I think there was a lot of people that agreed with me.
All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 56 ayes and 5 nays, the resolution is adopted. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills. We made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, the list is on your desk. I believe there are three.
First bill under consideration is Senate File 107, number 27 on general orders. Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, Senate File 107 has also been known as the CARE Act. It deals with the transition of patients from the hospital to their homes and providing assistance to their caregivers so that they're provided with the best quality care possible. The bill really takes several common sense steps to ensure a smooth transition from the hospital to the home. The major provisions in the bill include Section 1, Subdivision 1, which just provides definitions, but Subdivision 2 states that there shall be a designation of a caregiver in the medical record for any patient who wants it, and that would be done within a 24-hour period of their admission into the hospital. Again, it gives them that opportunity upon admission. By including the designation in the medical record, it shows that the caregiver is valued and part of the caregiving, and establishes another avenue by which the hospital can share important information. Section 1, Subdivision 3 deals with the notification of the caregiver of a discharge. So a caregiver must be notified if a discharge within a timely manner of a discharge being made. So it says that if a loved one is being discharged home or transferred to another facility, they must be notified again in a timely manner. And by providing the caregiver with this information well before the discharge, the caregiver can better manage the transition from one care setting to another. Section 1, Subdivision 4 is the instruction of aftercare tasks. It creates a framework through which a caregiver can receive instruction in the tasks that they will be asked to provide upon the discharge. It also provides that the caregiver provides the caregiver with someone to contact at the hospital once they're at home and may need further information. So, much of that training is to be done in person or via video so that they have the ability to see and hear the person being giving the instructions. Section 1, Subdivision 5 is the limitations on liability. All the parties that were involved in negotiating this deal have come to an agreement on this language. It included the AARP, the Hospital Association, the trial lawyers. This basically is making it clear that this legislation and the failure to comply with provisions in this legislation is not the grounds for which to initiate any kind of lawsuit against a hospital, although the information can be used in a lawsuit that's initiated for other reasons, but it in and of itself cannot be used to initiate a lawsuit. So those are the provisions of the bill. It does have broad support. It has support from the AARP. And a host of other healthcare groups, such as the Alzheimer's Association, the MS Society, the Heart and Cancer Associations, along with the Center on Aging, the Board on Aging, and the Minnesota Area Agencies on Aging. And this is becoming a bigger issue as our population ages. There's more hospitalizations, more people being transitioned from the hospital to home. And we want to make sure that we're providing the best quality care for people at home possible and making sure those care providers at home have the resources and the information they need to give good quality care. There's many stories of people who have experienced these transitions without having adequate information and been put in very difficult situations. And oftentimes that results in readmission to hospitals again, which costs more for the overall healthcare system. So this is one way to help reduce costs to the healthcare system generally as well. Most seniors who receive assistance at home rely exclusively on unpaid family caregivers for help. So that's not costing us anything in this bill. It's just making, I guess, more effective the care that is being provided. And it's important to note that more than 670,000 family caregivers in Minnesota help their loved ones to live independently, keeping them out of costly institutions such as nursing homes. And in Minnesota, family care providers, caregivers, provide unpaid care that's valued at about $8.2 billion annually. So that's money that's being saved by the state, by these caregivers. And once again, we should give them the tools necessary to provide good quality care. And we do have a high number of people who are readmitted to hospitals. Again, this would get that number down and save us money there as well. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And would the author stand for a couple of questions?
He will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Eakin, a couple of questions with regards to you're saying that your bill is reducing the cost of responsibility here, or reducing the cost of care. And knowing that there are social workers now in the hospital, I'm wondering, are they the ones now doing this? Are we creating another step? At first blush, Madam President and Senator, would be that family is going to be the first point of contact. And there's going to be a couple of questions in this statement that maybe you could answer. The other one would be the liability, the cost of liability of turning somebody over to and making them the caregiver, after caregiver, and there is family that's not notified. Where do the HIPAA rules come in? Do they play any effects here? And if the care was not given properly, and there were to be a horrible outcome, who would be responsible then for that? If there was a family member that wasn't able to be reached or immediately reached, or there's a couple of questions in there. If you could address those, please.
Senator Eakin.
Sure. Thank you, Madam President and Senator Ingebrigtsen. As far as the issue of liability is concerned, again, this is strictly a voluntary program. So once somebody is admitted into a hospital, they can designate somebody as their caregiver. It's not required. It's simply they're given that opportunity. If they take advantage of that opportunity and name somebody as a caregiver, then that person is notified of the admission into the hospital and is then given the information necessary, given the notification of discharge, given the training necessary to provide good quality care. As far as liability for either the caregiver or the hospital, again, there's no liability here. It states specifically in the bill that a caregiver is not, held liable for not providing the adequate care, but they're just being given the training and the information necessary so they can give that better quality care. It also makes it clear that the hospital cannot be held liable if you mentioned if they cannot contact or cannot reach the person who is the caregiver. There's also an out in the language here which says that as long as they make a good faith effort, so they just have to document that they have made that good faith effort, and when they tried to make the contact, if they're unable to make that contact, they are not required to hold on to the patient any longer. They can still move forward with the discharge, but they at least have to make that good faith effort.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Westrom.
Madam President, if Senator Eakin would yield for a question.
Senator Eakin will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Eakin, two questions. We already have a health care directive that any person can execute and designate as their health care agent, somebody that the hospitals can talk to, can take direction from. Especially if somebody is incapacitated or in a state where they're not able to make some of those decisions. What is the difference between this and them just executing a couple-page document? Most hospitals have it. And just signing a healthcare agent or a successive healthcare agent if the first person's not able to do it. It seems like this just duplicates what that already provides could be done. And with that, where was the push for this this effort?
Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Westrom, As far as the health care directives, this is different than that, and it's not redundant. Hospitals are not required to offer this opportunity to patients coming in at this time. And I do think it's important to note that many of our hospitals are doing a good job of providing those caregivers and with the information they need. But this is to make it clear that every patient needs to be given this opportunity. And so hopefully we'll get more of this type of activity of providing that good information to caregivers and fill in the gaps. And the AARP, you asked the question about where the initiative came from. The AARP is the one that's really been initiating such legislation and trying to ensure that people who are entering their retirement years, many of whom are going to need health care, are being provided with good quality care when they get home and don't experience readmissions into the hospital and have better prognosis.
Senator Westrom.
So Madam President, Senator Eakin, I think you were in your comments in advocating or presenting the bill. It is clear that this is one more requirement, one more piece of paperwork that our hospitals will have to document and make sure is in the file. I often hear from nursing homes and hospitals that is the type of bureaucracy or paperwork that we just keep asking them, telling them they need to do, that they are frustrated with. We don't always give them another increase in funding. Yet we would require this now as a new requirement of documentation in their records, and I'm trying to square that issue because when you presented it, you said they would have to at least document that they tried to find a caregiver or that they offered this if the patient wants it. And so, doesn't this just give the hospitals one more thing to do that would take time away from than actually administering care to the patient in the hospital? It's one more piece of paperwork in documenting, if you would yield for that question.
Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Westrom, I think it's important to note that the Hospital Association did work with us on language in this bill, and they are not opposed to this bill. Also, I think it's important to note that the Office of Ombudsman for Long-Term Care supports this bill. And I already mentioned that a number of hospitals are already doing such practices. These are really best practices that all hospitals should be doing, and many of them already are. I think Minnesota hospitals are outstanding compared to other states around the country and that they are already implementing a lot of these things. This is to make sure that all the hospitals are doing it. And those that are already doing it, obviously, it's not going to be any increased work whatsoever. But for those that aren't, it's valuable information they're providing to the aftercare for these patients so that they're not going to be readmitted to the hospital later because of complications that may develop. This is very valuable time spent making sure that those home care providers are given the information they need, and so that's why it's got such a broad base of support across the healthcare industry. It's just best practices that we want all hospitals to be implementing.
Madam President.
Senator Westrom.
Senator Eakin, thank you for that. One question on what you said. The Hospital Association is not opposing this, is what I thought I heard you say. Are you saying they also support this, or are they just not opposing this, if you could answer that?
Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Westrom, you heard me correctly. They are not opposing it. I didn't say that they're supporting it, but they do not oppose it.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give Senate File 107 its third reading.
Senate File Number 107, a bill for an act relating to health care, requiring a hospital to provide a patient the opportunity to designate a caregiver upon entry to the hospital.
Secretary will take the roll.
Thank you.
All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 36 on general orders, Senate File 857, Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill on the floor of the Senate. I would like to thank my co-authors, Senators Dietzick, Kent, Newman, and Jensen, and also draw your attention to the letter that is in front of you from the Alzheimer's Association supporting this bill. And I want to especially thank Senator Newman, who presented the bill for me in the Judiciary Committee because I wasn't able to attend on the day it was scheduled. It's also been heard in local government. This is a bill that would establish a working group, and its purpose, after being convened by the Commissioner of Public Safety, would be to study the state's need for a silver alert system to aid in the recovery of missing persons who are senior citizens with dementia, traumatic brain injury, Alzheimer's disease, or other cognitive mental disabilities. Wandering is the issue, and it's a serious concern for individuals living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other similar conditions. We know that 6 out of 10 people with Alzheimer's will wander at some point during that disease process. And we also know that the incidence of Alzheimer's has been increasing and will continue to increase because of the growing number of senior persons in our population. I think it might be helpful for you to know that about 35 states currently have silver alerts or similar systems, and that this bill would study the need for the cost of establishing a silver alert program in our state. I would like you also to know that the language of the bill indicates that this work group shall assess the state's current notification system, which is used already to locate missing persons in special situations, including the state's Amber Alert Program. And this also, the working group is asked to examine alert systems in other states. That will help us determine whether or not we are using the most successful methods for locating missing persons, including vulnerable seniors. The BCA has testified in support of this bill, along with the Alzheimer's Association. The supporters of the bill have argued that seniors with dementia or similar illnesses who go missing is a common problem for law enforcement, and one that has been anticipated to get worse because of the state's aging population. The bill itself indicates that the working group is going to have to make a report on its findings, whether or not it's an appropriate system to use for Silver Alert, whether or not there needs to be changes to the overall alert system, and what the cost of that would be. And the bill also articulates the description of the membership of the working group. That's a complete description of the bill, and I'm hoping for your support.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no further discussion. Oh, there is. Senator Westrum.
Madam President, I thought maybe some others would raise some questions or cautions. Senator Sharon, I think the idea of having an alert system or a quick response to a senior citizen, especially, is probably mainly who we're talking about with dementia or memory issues, is a laudable goal and a direction of how can we improve the alerts and look for those persons quickly, especially in our brutal winters, 5, 6, 7 months out of the year. It's very unlikely you can survive overnight or multiple nights in those months, spring and summer and fall during the warmer seasons. It's a little more likely, or a lot more likely. But Senator Sharon, this is a working group. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on what you expect this group to come back with? And then at that time, would that be when we would enact either an alert system or something else that they might recommend?
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you for the opportunity to articulate what is in the language of the bill. You may not have the bill in front of you, so I'll just review with you that the group is to make recommendations about whether or not we should establish a silver alert system, including but not limited to criteria for activating that system. And as well, we want the committee to assess the state's current notification system, the one that is used to locate people under special circumstances, such as the Amber Alert System, and we expect the working group to assess alert systems in other states to determine what is the most successful methods for us in seeking missing persons, including vulnerable senior citizens. They are to articulate recommendations to us. They will not be implemented without further legislative action. And including in the recommendations should be an analysis of the cost of that program.
Senator Westrum.
Madam President, Senator Sharon, thank you. I just raised the concern, and I think this working group is a okay process to go, and I will plan to support this part of it. I guess I would do it with the caution, and I think you've stressed this a little bit, whether they could come back and say this, we should not do this. And I guess that's my concern, because our AMBER and our alert systems are so important, and it's always hard to exactly find what should be alerted and what shouldn't. I find myself in the last month or so with the 10-year-old in the Anoka or Crystal area, I forget his name offhand, but the alert system was not alerted, because I remember one of the news reports saying there wasn't criteria met, that they thought there was a threat, and it didn't warrant an alert system. And so one could question whether or not that would have helped in that situation or not, and time maybe will tell. But I remember myself thinking, I wonder why that alert wasn't made, and the authorities dealing with it obviously followed the process. The flip side is also my concern, though, that we don't have so many things we will alert the public to that it desensitizes the real urgent ones that might have criminal matters at hand. There might be somebody on the loose with dangerous weapons with intent to harm or kill, or some other dangerous issue going on where it's important for the public to take note. It's a little bit like the story about the little boy who cries wolf, and I share this with my children at times, and we all know it, and how important it is not to have a system that alerts so often that everybody becomes desensitized to it and they don't think anything of it. And so, Senator Sharon, I raise those concerns as the working group would move forward, that they consider that very seriously. And maybe there's other ways to alert than just going through the crime network alert system when somebody's more local, or maybe there's a certain area that people are pretty sure that they are in, versus going through the whole crime network alert system. And so I raise those concerns from the Senate and from our perspective of not diminishing the crime alert system that we all need to take notice of when there really is a dangerous situation or a kidnapping or a child missing, that we could likely stop or help if we quickly act. And so, Senator Sharon, I just raise those concerns. Thank you for your comments, and we'll wait and see what the working group comes back with.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I rise in support of Senate File 857. I want to thank Senator Sharon for looking ahead at the vision that is coming our way. We have 10,000 baby boomers that turn 65 today in this nation. Minnesota is no exception. And tomorrow, another 10,000. And the next day, another 10,000, and on every day for the next 19 years. That's the magnitude of people who reach that age of 65, who 1 out of 9 will have Alzheimer's. And by the time they age to 85, it will be 1 out of 3. So we do have, Madam President, a tsunami of Alzheimer's coming our way. And everything that we can do to better prepare our communities to be dementia capable is a step in the right direction. So I not only support the need that this bill is addressing, but I also support the thoughtful manner in which this bill has been brought forward. Members have raised very good questions about how should a silver alert system be organized. What are the details? And we know how important details are, and that's why I appreciate the focus in this bill of a working group to determine those details. But members, make no mistake, Alzheimer's is headed our way in big numbers. This is one small thing that our state can be doing to better prepare. And let me just say, as a daughter whose father has been in this position, there's something very frightening about an elderly gentleman who has wandered away, not knowing who he is or where he is, and for the family to try and find them. So, again, I would urge a green vote, members. Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And I also rise in support of this concept. And, Senator Sharon, thank you very much for bringing this forward. There is a real defining difference, though, I think, between the what you will find the alarm system going out for more dangerous or missing children alarms versus the, as Senator Nelson says, that the large number that we're going to be dealing with Alzheimer's moving forward. And just assure me that I see you have the Brain Injury Alliance group here, that we have a considerable amount of TBIs certainly coming out of the military so on and so forth, that we're always hearing about and we're always dealing with in the legislature, it seems like, and looking for places for them to gain treatment and to be housed, and certainly they're not necessarily as the title reflects here, silver alert. Nevertheless, it's a good system. I appreciate it. I think you'll find that there are a lot of private entities that have systems already in place that can hook up with public safety and has been, I think, some pretty successful ones, but there are some that could be missing as well, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give Senate File 857 its third reading.
Senate File Number 857, a bill for an act relating to public safety, establishing a working group to study and make recommendations on establishing a silver alert system.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 4 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 127 on general orders, Senate File 1444, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 1444 deals with mortgages and clarifying provisions related to foreclosures or sales. The Minnesota Bankers Association, along with the Bar Association and Legal Aid, worked together on this language in support of its passage. Under current law, a homeowner may postpone a foreclosure, but then the redemption period is reduced. This bill clarifies that that reduction only applies to this case and does not impact the redemption period of a subsequent foreclosure. Also, that a homeowner has 1 year to bring claim if proper notice of postponement was not given. And finally, the bill would require a mortgage holder to provide the reinstatement amount within 3 days of a homeowner's request, and that the amount be effective for 7 days or until the foreclosure sale, whichever comes first. Members, that's the bill. This solves two legal matters that have arisen in the last year. I don't know of any opposition, and I would ask for member support.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, the Secretary will give Senate File 1444 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1444, a bill for an act relating to real property, mortgages, clarifying provisions relating to foreclosure sales.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Are there any announcements?
Madam President.
Oh, Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, members, the Environment and Economic Development and Agricultural Finance Division will meet immediately after session in room 107.
Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senators Reinert, Wicklund, Chamberlain, Ninau, Alday, Senator Gazelka, 1220 to 1240, Senator Miller, 1 to 110 p.m. Are there any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do now adjourn until Tuesday, April 14th, 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.